We know, of course, that it's not easy being green. But in some parts of North America, it is getting harder and harder just to be a frog. A few years ago, something strange began happening to the frogs in the ponds and wetlands near Lake Champlain in western Vermont. A large number of frogs were missing limbs. David Skelly, professor of ecology at the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, recognized these deformities as quite significant, not only to frogs, but to humans. Professor Skelly.
The problem that surfaced about 10 years ago was the discovery in several parts of North America, from the Pacific Northwest through the upper Midwest through the East Coast, the discovery of populations where frogs with the wrong number of limbs, that is, either missing limbs or with extra limbs, were discovered at rates of 20, 30, sometimes 40% of the animals in a population in this condition. These things were pretty easy to find because they were hopping around in a circle. This is a lethal condition. Obviously, as an ecologist, one of the first things you think about is that there are certainly going to be risks to the population that at least need to be explored. Is this going to contribute to what is already recognized to be a global problem in declining populations of amphibians, extinctions of amphibians that have been reported over the last couple of decades? And then probably more viscerally, from the public perspective, many of these episodes were occurring in waters that are used for public drinking water supply. And one of the first things that people were concerned about is if these animals are developing in a way that they're growing the wrong number of limbs, are they being exposed to something in the water that may pose a human health risk?
What made the occurrence of frog deformities especially troubling to Professor Skelly and his colleagues at Yale was that amphibians can reproduce in toxic stews that few other vertebrates can tolerate. Even sewers and septic systems are fine as long as water can be found. Amphibians can make it through the hottest summers and the coldest winters.
I studied frogs before we knew that they were declining and all these deformities were happening. And what I learned before that time was that amphibians appear to be relatively indestructible. They've been on the planet for 500 million years. One of the species I study has a closest living relative that it split from maybe 50 million years ago. So this animal has been certainly not unchanged, but recognizable for tens of millions of years. And it has lived through cataclysmic changes in the shape of the continents and glaciation after glaciation and so on and so on. This is a group of animals that has weathered just about everything that's been thrown at them. Tyrannosaurus rex and brontosaurus. Frogs have been around since the Triassic, which was, you know, hundreds of millions of years ago. This is a very old group of animals that has dealt with all these challenges. And then in the last just 20 or 30 years, we've recognized a real phenomenon, and that is that all over the world, the frogs are disappearing. We're losing species. We're losing populations. We have this deformity phenomenon going on. This has captured public attention, but it's also captured the attention of biologists that study these things. This is a wake-up call to them as well, that a group of organisms that they thought were extremely resilient are giving way under overall what has to be pressure from human changes to the environment.
When the frog deformities began to appear in New England, the initial theory was that the deformities were caused by a parasite transferred by a snail to the frog. At this point, the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation requested proposals on the ecology of infectious diseases. Professor Skelly and his lab group responded.
We developed a proposal to look at how environmental variation may be driving these parasite-caused outbreaks of deformities. So we thought from the outset that the evidence for this parasite-based hypothesis was pretty strong and that it bared following up. When my lab group got interested in this, we knew that there was evidence from the laboratory that infection by this parasite could cause limb deformities. We also knew that there was not very good understanding of the environmental context in which this became a problem. It was just this patchy pattern all over the country, and there wasn't really any clear idea why the same frog species in one wetland or pond was having real problems, and you could drive 5 minutes away and you didn't see any problem at all. We investigated over 40 wetlands all over the state of Vermont. And as I said, one of the first things we wanted to do was to try to identify this parasite inside these natural wetlands and figure out whether the pattern of parasite distribution matched the distribution of where the problems were occurring. We didn't find the parasite in any Vermont wetlands, and we looked for years and years and years. And we looked in a variety of ways. So we looked inside the snails, which are one of the hosts, and we looked inside the amphibians, which are the critical hosts that we're interested in, and we came up zero.
The question that must be asked, if the parasite was not found in the Vermont wetlands, but the frogs are deformed, could there be another cause of the deformities?
If you go to the literature, if you go read all these dusty journal articles and add up what they see in the natural world, frogs with too many legs versus frogs that are missing limb elements or missing entire legs, overwhelmingly what we see are frogs that are missing either parts of legs or entire legs. So the phenomenon that gathered everyone's attention on a national scale is missing legs. That is the major phenomenon. Our analysis suggesting that if you're close to an agricultural field, you're much more likely to be deformed, suggests to us at the very least that we have to consider that chemicals such as agricultural pesticides may be part of the picture. If that's true, then we've got a vertebrate sitting out in the natural environment absorbing chemical agents like pesticides and developing abnormally. We are vertebrates. We come in contact with these same waters, either because they're part of a public water drinking supply or we're doing recreational activities and so on. We're coming in contact with these waters as well. We need to understand whether there are risks to people. We don't have a human limb deformity problem that we know about, but if we push ourselves back to understanding the genetic underpinnings of this problem in amphibians, what we might discover is that the genes that are controlling limb development in frogs might be the very ones that control reproductive development in humans.
The research and investigation by Professor Skelly and his lab group continues. They have conclusively determined that the frog deformities in the Vermont wetland area were not caused by the accepted hypothesis, a parasite. There are other causes, possibly chemical, and the linkage to these causes, frog deformities and human health, will be examined.
I think this research into amphibian limb deformities is part of a bigger picture where there's evidence, not well established, but suggestive evidence implying that there are chemicals out in the environment that are affecting wildlife species and may also be affecting people. I'm not an alarmist, but I think that this deserves our attention in an important way. One of the great unknowns is whether there are real human health risks that may be kind of cryptic, but cumulatively could be a big deal. We just have no idea whether that's true. Environmental regulation over the last 35 years has been remarkably successful in figuring out what sort of agents are in the air that might be influencing health, what's in the water that's influencing water quality. So we've cleaned up our waters, we've cleaned up the air in many dimensions, and we can even measure the health benefits of that. The great unknown, I think, in the next couple of decades is whether this enterprise to use chemicals in ways that we no doubt benefit from in big ways. We don't know what that does. And I think that's one of the great challenges for agencies that have responsibilities for regulating water quality and air quality. What's all this stuff doing?
For more information about Professor Skelly's program and the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, visit environment.yale.edu. Or call 1-800-825-0330.